Okay, I've started recording now.
Okay, this is usually like the pre-show.
Right.
You know, before we play the music to start the show. And this is sort of a special show because Howard's not here. More on that in a few minutes.
Yes.
Dan is sitting in with me and Phil's here. Sweet Phil. Whose birthday we missed on Friday.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with missing my birthday. I'm too old to celebrate my birthday.
Well, it's nice to acknowledge it, and we would have liked to have acknowledged it, Phil, but, yeah. You know, it was Friday. We don't do a show on Friday, and you were 33 years old.
Well, my mother pulled a caper on me on my birthday, so she bought a birthday cake, and so mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's rather nice, and so she got the baker to write down happy birthday, right?
Right.
And so instead of happy birthday, Phil, this is the woman who named me, she mm-hmm. somehow got her to spell my name as P-H-I-P, happy birthday, Pip.
On the birthday note, today is the 7th birthday of my granddaughter, May.
Oh, is it really May?
Yes.
That's awesome.
This highlights how long we've been friends, Dan, and Howard in particular, because Howard often talks about the first social event that he ever attended sort of with me was Melanie's 7th birthday.
Oh, really?
In 1989. Imagine that.
Wow.
So the mother of my 7-year-old granddaughter, Howard, attended her 7th birthday.
And now her daughter is 7 now.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, it's crazy how time has flown. So happy birthday, May.
Happy birthday.
Okay, you can start the show.
All right, let me push the button. I'm using my mouse, by the way, which I connected to Beautiful. Howard's computer within 15 seconds.
The following episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bodog, and our newest sponsor, Doer, D-U-E-R, the world's most comfortable pants. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, we have a Patreon account. And now from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Fred and Dan.
Fran. Well, we were once referred to as Hubu and Fran, Howard and I. I forget by who and when that was, but yeah, Hubu and Fran.
Was that a mistake or was it somebody just joking around?
I think I soap opera'd my head and went, oh, it's Fred and Dan, Fran. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, Dan. Just one memory over the 30-some odd years.
The millennia of jokes and excitement that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So let's set the scene here. First of all, our Gig Sky guest of the day is Liz West today.
Right.
In a little while from now, a great friend of Dan Duran's, and everybody knows Liz West because her face has been on television in this Southern Ontario market for years and years and years. Maybe not so much now, but a very familiar face and friend of Dan Duran's. Now, Howard, of course, is in Italy. I'm sure he's arrived. I think his flight left at 6:30
yesterday.
Last night.
Yeah.
So it's about, 9-hour flight? So he's there.
And yeah, he texted me just to relax and enjoy the show because he was a little worried about me being worried about doing the show.
Does Dan sound like he needs to be louder to you?
Just a touch, yes. About 5%.
Okay,
all
that's
right.
Good.
How about that?
About 5%.
Does that sound a little bit better?
But don't be louder than me.
Right. Sure.
I'm just looking here. The time in Venice is 1:13. So I would imagine, I guess they were tired when they arrived because it would have been morning Venice time.
But and they went to the airport early because they had heard there was some issue that Rachel had heard. So
some seating thing,
and they couldn't get in. Whatever, there was backups at the departure gates or the screening. Mm-hmm. So I drove them to the airport because I'm staying here at Howard's place and got them there for 2:30 for the 6:30 flight.
Okay.
So
anyway, 6:30 flight, so 6 hours and then 9. So I have them there at about 3:30 our time, which would have been like 9:30 Italy time. Anyway, it's 1:13. So they're either sleeping or they're out having lunch. I hope the carbonara.
Which, as we know, is not from there.
You know, Venice is the I was looking, how safe is Venice? It's in the 30th percentile of safety, meaning 70% of cities are safer than Venice. 30% of cities are more dangerous. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's probably pre-COVID, right? Things have probably changed a little bit in the winter, and it's kind of wintry there right now. Isn't there, like, wasn't there some flooding recently? The Center Square floods this time of year?
Yeah, right. Well, Venice is sinking. Anyway, right. When you're in Venice, you know, he'll have a great time. I'm so happy for him. He was so excited about going to Italy. You know, and he'll have a great time there. The thing is, he can't waste much time, like, even on day one, because he's only there for, what, 7 or 8 days or whatever it is. So, you know, he's got to live, man. Well, he's there. And the one thing I kept forgetting to mention to him, when you're in Venice, they keep trying to get you to go out on the boats. And I don't mean the big canoes and the canals. I mean, these boats take you out to glass blowing. Did you do that? Have you ever been to Venice, Dan?
No, I haven't been to Venice. I've been to Italy, but not to Venice.
Yeah, okay. So there's all sorts of glass blowing places out in these little factories off the coast. So they get you in the boat.
To take you there.
And I did it because I thought, you know, that might be interesting. So to watch people glass blowing. But I don't know if Howard's that type of guy. I don't know if he'll take a few hours out to witness glass blowing. Be interesting to see.
Because it's a boat ride there and a boat ride back?
Well, it's a boat ride there and a boat, you know, and him, you got to catch him, you know, you got to get his attention right away. You got to titillate him right away or he's not interested.
Right.
But anyway, so Dan's here for the next 3 days. And of course, Phil will be here for the next 3 days. Phil doesn't work Mondays anymore because of his job at the...
The
meatball factory.
Right.
Although, Dan, I feel a little out of place with you out of the gate, to be honest, because one thing I've always said about Dan Duran is you never have a bad word to say about anybody. No. I've said that to Delise. I've said it to Darren, our buddy, and I've said it to Delise. I said it, the amazing thing about Dan Duran, he never has a bad word to say about anybody. You have bad words to say about some things, but
true.
Not people.
Yes.
And, you know, that's sort of really counter to what this show is all about, right?
Okay, so no, I have to figure out how
to... No, seriously.
Diss people a little bit better?
Well, you've heard the show.
Yeah.
Like, neither one of us, right? However, we do not hesitate to go at people and...
True.
No.
True. That is true.
Do you think you can handle that?
I think,
like,
I
we
can.
Go out of our way, right, to attack people sometimes just because it's fun. That
right.
That's not part of your world.
Well, you can be my guide for the next. Uh-huh. If you think I'm holding back or something, you should be on me for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
But Dan Duran has been, you know, as you know, you've been Howard's friend for how many years now?
I don't know. I had to. It was in 79, 78, 79. It was my second radio job. No, it was my third radio job by that point. Because when I was still in high school, I worked at a radio station in Edmonton. And then I moved to a radio station in Lloydminster, where I met our friends Dan Kingsbury and
right.
Jeff Lumby, who have both been on this show and both went on to do great radio things. And then I moved off to Calgary. So actually, it's my fourth station to be think that that's when I met Howard. So I'd already been at three stations. But, you know, the fourth station was I was there for 3 months.
Okay, but how long ago was that? Was that 10 years before you and I met in 1989?
Yeah, so it was 10
years.
So
you knew Howard about 10 years longer than me.
That's true, yeah.
But in the ensuing 30 years, even though, like, Howard is one of your best friends, if not your best friend, he's the godfather of your child. Over the past 30 years, I've probably spent more time with you than Howard.
Right.
Would that not be correct?
That would be correct, yes. In the last
while,
yeah.
And I know that bothers Howard a bit, but...
Yes. In the best friend category of the hierarchy, it's important that, you know, these things are tracked by Howard. So,
yeah.
You know, I've just got a bunch of best friends, and he's among them, and then...
Well, I'm the same way.
Yeah. It just, I don't really rank them. It's like, who's my bestest of the best friends? And I think it's more important to Howard because of our long history.
And that may surprise a lot of people, as well. I mean, our long, you know, our history with the Edge and CFNY, you were part of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you came in 1989.
Right.
On the recommendation of Howard.
Yes. And Dan Kingsbury, who is...
Dan Kingsbury. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I met you. But then almost immediately, you know, and over the course of the next 3 days, we could, I guess, maybe talk about the odd CFNY story and things that happened there. But I think we've pretty much hashed that out. Yeah. I had the trailer, the Tin Palace, which I always talked about on the air, even before you arrived.
Right.
And I think this story may be interesting for people. I had the Tin Palace. I talked about it. You seemed to be interested in it. But I got the impression you wouldn't be the guy, the type of guy that would be interested in a trailer park.
No, definitely not.
I just didn't.
No, I was not that kind of guy. Now, mind you, the camping part was great, and that's what I kind of imagined, because I'd really never been to a trailer park before I visited you. I just knew what I saw on TV and, you know, tornadoes taking trailers and things. However, both my wife at the time and I had grown up kind of in a parallel universe where our dads had both done a lot of camping, and both had taken school buses and converted them into RVs. Mm-hmm. We never painted ours off the... it's like Partridge Family back in the day. But we never painted our bus. We just ran with a yellow school bus. It's a 1958 Chevy that we all loved. And so I enjoyed camping. So that weekend we came up to visit you, because you had been bugging both Howard and I to come up and take a visit. And by the next weekend, we had bought a trailer, you know, five down from you, just because that place was so astonishing.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, because when I invited you up, I was a bit nervous, because I thought, boy, you know, this is a guy that he's lived in San Francisco. He's been all over. I'm not sure he's going to like this trailer park setting, even though it's on the water and it's, as trailer parks go, it's beautiful. And I loved it. I mean, the social life there was great. Great people, great friends. But you came up, and as you say, like almost instantly, you bought a trailer, and that would have been 1994, I believe.
Oh, you've got a better recollection than I do. Oh. Everything sort of gets,
yeah, that's 1994.
Yeah.
And here we are, 2021, and we're still there.
Yeah. And so we're neighbors now.
And we're neighbors now. Yeah. We weren't before.
Right.
But it's a remarkable run, and explains why I see you
a whole lot more than
Howard sees you. I mean, we spend a lot of time together in the summer. And again, we will next year. It's funny because, each year comes along, it's like, am I going to do it another year? I've really been thinking that way, but I will.
Yeah.
And I will. And part of the reason is because of, you know, the social
fellowship
aspect
of the friendships.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. That's it.
And you know, it's nice. Winter actually is nice for that. I mean, if we lived there year round, it'd be a different story, I think. But the break in the winter from all that social activity, because most everybody scatters all over Southern Ontario and then comes back in the spring, right? And that part of the social thing is nice. So then you get back to kind of, you know, enjoying each other's company and ignoring all the things that irritate each other about, you know, what each other does, like playing music a little bit too loud.
Yeah, there's a few of those things. The trailer too is also represented, well, again, we talk about friendship, and you know, it's been my opportunity also to build a relationship with your son, who is Howard's godson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which may be another bone of contention that I see. I see a lot more of
Colton
of Colton than he does.
Yes.
But listen, I keep him up to date all the time of what's going on with Colton. So,
well, that's pretty good. Yeah. It's funny.
Dan, another question that I've had about you recently, and I don't know whether you want to disclose this, the whole Dan Duran thing. Have you ever revealed your real last name? Is this something you do, or is this something you don't do?
I don't normally do it. But it was only, it got changed originally because my real name is difficult to pronounce the way it's spelled and the other way around, which is Giebert. Right. But it's spelled Gubert or Gubert or Gubert.
Right.
It's so many ways to pronounce it. We pronounce it Gubert. So it was the first time I got my changed my name was when I was working at CKRA in Edmonton. And a guy that was a longtime radio guy there, Len Tucson, was the program director. And he insisted I change my name. And he changed it for me to Dan Garrett. So I was Dan Garrett for a little while. I went back
like to Steve Garrett from the TV show. Yeah. What was his name?
Yeah. So that was the first time I changed my name. And then I went back to my normal name. And then by the time I ended up in Calgary, I ended up at a party. It was a longer story, but just I ended up at a party. And an ad agency gal was trying to come up with the most radio sounding name they could. And by the end of the party, they determined they all figured out that Dan Duran was the name. And then I changed the name within a few days on the air, and I was on the air in Calgary with Howard at that point, just an hour a day doing stuff. So that's when I changed the name, and it just stuck because it has great recall.
Wait, and was it tied to, Duran Duran popular at the time? Was that connected to it?
Yes, they were.
Well, I would yeah. imagine that's where it came from.
Right.
Because, yeah, Duran Duran was around at the time, right?
Yeah. With Hungry Like the Wolf, and that was playing in the air probably around the time that all happened. Mm-hmm. In the day.
So that's how you became Dan Duran.
That's how I became Dan Duran.
Mm-hmm. You know, usually at this point, too, in the show, we, Howard and I, sort of morph into what's going on in the news. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because so often when we're doing the show, I'll say something and he would have been thinking about it already. How a lot of our conversations start organically. They just do. We just seem to be on the same wavelength.
Well, you guys have worked together since 1989. And
exactly.
Have a great shorthand, right?
Yes, and we tend to be interested in the same things, which would explain, you know, all the Trump talk recently and vaccine talk recently and all the other things that sometimes we get some pushback on. People say enough of that, and you know,
yes,
we've heard we've heard enough of that stuff. So when I sit here and I talk to you, I try to think of what would Dan Duran be interested in talking about that's in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I can nail it with Howard right off the bat. So Dan Duran this morning, what's in the top, what's on top of mind for you?
You know, I was there was all kinds of different, I always anything about talk to the manager, I always I always am gravitated to. I do.
Oh, you have a talk to the manager story?
Well, I'm going to bring one later in the week. I'm still not done with it, but there's one coming up. But also scams. I'm fascinated by how people can get, you know, drawn into scams. Mm-hmm. Like, how could that person? It's a smart person. How did they get drawn into, you know, giving money in a romance or something to get somebody from far away, right? Or all these email things that, you know, people get. Mm-hmm. I've got an email to read later, the junk email that just blew me away the other day. There's a scam that I just heard about that it's so sophisticated. During COVID, I guess the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center came out with a figure today that this year so far, in 2021, $163 million dollars have been scammed out of people. And this particular is one of the scams that's on the go right now. So the target of the scam gets a job online. So they're searching for a job online, right? So right. They apply and they get the job. And then the bad guys then send them a check to pay for their office supplies at home, like a new computer to get all set up, right? So here's a check to cover those. And then asks after the deposit for the person to buy their office supplies through their preferred supplier. So then out of their bank account, they e-transfer the money to the supplier, and then the supplier sends the stuff to their house. And by the time that happens, the check doesn't clear the bank
and the bank won't refund the money because, you know, it was a bounced check. So you accepted a bad check. So that means they're out the money and they've already sent the money. So they're out the money that they sent to somebody and the bank wants that money back. So it's an interesting scam. And you can see how you get drawn into that if you're, you know, you're excited about the new job and you've done all your, you know, wait. People have waited a couple of days for the check to clear or not clear. And it doesn't. They go ahead and then the third day the check doesn't clear. Then they find out about it. And it's an interesting, you know, and you can see that, you know, unless you're aware of some of these scams, that how you could get drawn into them.
Well, Howard talks about his brother who got, you know, the gift card scam.
No.
Delisa's uncle got caught in the gift card scam where they phone you and tell you the government, they owe you money.
Yeah,
but you can pay them in gift cards. I mean, that was just so over the top crazy, but people did it. Yeah, I believe Howard's brother got nailed in. Delisa's uncle did too. Like it's crazy.
Because, so there must have been something. The dialogue must have been so convincing that it seemed reasonable.
Well, it's threatening. That's especially the government ones.
Oh right, like yeah.
It's down. It freaks people out. And then you know if you do have say any skeletons in the closet tax wise or whatever, and if they hit on those people, maybe.
Maybe they'll come through. They think there's, I know that there's something that I owe and now it's coming through. They're finally on to me. Yeah.
Now, in this scam you're talking about, I believe, too, that the banks, they're not going to cover the money, apparently.
Generally they won't. I mean, there have been some of the stuff that's been publicized. Mm-hmm. The banks have come through and said, you know, on a one time, you know, good faith kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in general, they're not obligated to because you've accepted a check or deposited a check that's fraud.
Right.
The only thing that people are complaining about is that it's so convincing. That check was branded. So some check company, you know, had branded with the transit numbers along the bottom and everything. That it looked normal and very professional. So should the bank have had accepted that? And, you know, there's online depositing. You take a picture of your check now. Mm-hmm. So I guess the people who are complaining about it say, well, the bank should do more due diligence on those deposited checks and perhaps wait a couple of days before the balance shows up in your account. Mm-hmm. You can tell your bank that you don't want to have the money immediately. You want the check to clear before anything goes on.
But yeah, it's amazing how the banks try to get out of that stuff. Remember a few years ago, the whole mortgage fraud thing where people would actually take control of your home without you knowing about it?
Right.
And then they would sign off on the bank somehow, forging your signature, however it came down. And then people would get notices saying that they owed a bunch of money on their house when it was paid off or a lot less than they thought. And they'd go to the bank. And the response from the bank was, well, we're sorry, but you got to cover this money. And again, a lot of things have been put in place since then. To protect people from that.
Yeah,
title. But that was one of the most fascinating aspects of that scam years ago when people would literally lose their homes because of mortgage fraud or whatever the term was for it. And the banks, you know, if I go into a bank, you know, or if somebody goes, if I go into a bank, and I signed for something, I get it. But how is something signed for without you being there in person or being verified and it your fault? That's a problem with the bank.
Yeah. You know? You'd think that some of these, you know, and I, you know, banks are out for money. So that's what they're, that's their whole business. And you know, one of the things that bugs me about the banks is the service charges. I got service charged a while ago because I had, what was it? There's a version of this for overdraft. When you go beyond your overdraft, they let you, then they charge you a crazy amount of money. But this happened on a credit card for me, I think, where the balance just exceeded the allowable amount, whatever it is.
Right.
And so they let the charge go through. And then I looked at the statement the following month and the charge did go through. But they also charged, I think it was like a $10 charge, but they charged me $29 for letting it go through.
All right.
Which was like, I phoned him and he said, well, like, wait a minute, that's an unreasonable charge. It was $5 or $6 but what are you trying to prevent me from going over my limit?
Okay, was this a call to the manager?
Oh, yeah. It was a call to the manager.
Hey, Dan Duran, why don't we get to some business here? Why don't you tell us about Dewar Pants?
Dewar Pants.
Mm-hmm.
That's the pants that...
Dewar Clothing.
Yeah, and the pants, that's the aren't those the pants that Howard took to Venice with him?
Of course.
Because they're so comfortable and stretchy.
Are you calling that up right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm still working on it.
Well, maybe I'll tell you about the retirement Sherpa. Tim Niblett.
Yes.
Is a portfolio manager, Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tim will be by tomorrow with his weekly update on what's going on in the world of money and how maybe you should invest or what he thinks are the best opportunities out there, whether you have an existing portfolio or you want to start from scratch. Tim is the guy to talk to. He's the Retirement Sherpa. RetirementSherpa.ca is how to contact Tim, like many Humble and Fred listeners have. Dan?
Designed for movers. I mean, I'm sure they're not designed for, you know, like we're talking movers and shakers. I'm sure that movers would appreciate them. But Dewar Pants are built with technical design features and tons of stretch. The stretch is a really cool thing. Street-ready styles and washes. Each pair supports a lifestyle of function and fashion. From Netflix binges to weekend scrambles, the biggest pitches and the coldest commutes, Dewar has you covered early for Black Friday starting November 21st. It's a pretty big deal. You can save up to 40% on the pants that you'll never want to take off and that never go on sale. It's a very rare thing. So anytime after November 21st, go to Dewar.ca. That's Dewar.ca. Dewar.ca.
Did you have an opportunity to see any of the Rittenhouse trial yesterday?
Yeah, isn't that the one with a whacked out judge? There's two on the go right now, and I've gotten them mixed up. The Rittenhouse one, and there's the other one that's on the go.
The Aubrey.
Aubrey, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's the Rittenhouse one that fascinates me. Did you see any of it yesterday?
I did not see any of it yesterday. I did see some snippets of that judge. Man, he looks weird. He looks like an old, you know, curmudgeon of a man.
You know, they say that jury's already made up their mind. It's almost like he's already made up his mind.
Yeah.
It's something. But I was saying, you know, Howard and I were talking about this the other day, and, you know, it's another one of those things where I put it on, and then I wonder why I've put it on, because I just sit there and I get aggravated. And again, it's another indication of how broken the United States is, because there's people actually defending. Listen, I understand the lawyers have to defend them. That's part of the system. That's part of the process. But again, the television networks, be it Fox or CNN, they've all picked a side with this thing. And, you know, you might differ politically. You may have a different attitude, you know, when it comes to whatever, the economy, the border, all those things, all those political things. Great. But what this kid did, to actually see people pick sides now just because they think it's opposite to what the other side thinks, it's really become a liberal, a Republican thing.
Well, that's and that was
Democrat thing, because they just assumed, you know, because those riots that took place in Wisconsin were, you know, Black Lives Matter and everything, that this kid, now I should take the position that this kid is somehow innocent because of the political nature of what happened. It's something else.
It's strange that someone this is a guy that took a gun to a riot or whatever, and then created the problem and felt in danger, which is that's his defense. He felt it was self-defense. Well, I mean, when you took that rifle, that AR-15, to that situation, you were provoking. Because obviously, if somebody's seeing an AR-15, if somebody's wearing it, and they pointed it at anyone, there's a certain amount of crowd that will say, well, we'll flee, and there's going to be a certain amount of the crowd that goes, wait a minute, we got to save people here, because this could be a mass shooting event in the middle of all of this, right? I don't know. The The judge in this trial is, you're right, he's already made up his mind and has meant many things he's done so far. Did you see the, actually, I guess I watched a clip that had something to do with him, his instructions to the jury. I wish I had it here. And he started talking and giving these convoluted directions to what they were to judge the all the counts and how, you know, that they all had to agree on each one of these counts. He stopped halfway through a sentence and for a good 20 or 30 seconds didn't move on and then decided, oh, I better stop here because I got myself in mid-sentence there. Mm-hmm. It was like he had a stroke halfway through his instructions to the jury.
Well, again, what just bothers me, it's like you think there are some things we can agree on. You know, again, so polarized down there. There are some things we can agree on. And you'd think on this one they could agree on. This kid gets an AR-15. Heads downtown, so you know, to protect a car dealership or whatever the bullshit is. And then, you know, they've even got video of what the kid did and how it all came down. You think there'd be consensus on this, that, you know, that was wrong. Yeah, he's a 17-year-old kid. Should he be given some slack as far as a sentence goes? I don't know about any of that, but what I do know is what he did was just wrong. And yet, here we are again. It's like Tucker Carlson, Fox News, going out of their way to find out why. Excuses for this kid. Excuses for him. And he killed two people and seriously wounded somebody else. It's, I don't know, just another indication of how screwed up they are.
But it's also one of those things where your networks like Fox News and that they see the opportunity there. First of all, there's video of the kid doing what he did. And then they're always looking for conflict and making a bad guy. That's their formula that Roger Ailes came up with years and years ago. So that's what they're looking for is, okay, well, the conflict is so we can create this amazing conflict that really was, there's no conflict there. I mean, the guy shot some people. He should go to jail.
No,
so, let's just hurry this up. It turns into then the colors, the coverage and the jurors and people's opinions and continues on with this great divide that the media and social media has created.
It becomes showbiz.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it's become. Yeah. And again, I don't know when I'm going to learn. I got off social media because it used to put a knot in my stomach. I carried it with me throughout the day. And I don't know, I was just drawn to it again yesterday. And I sit there and I go, I'm feeling shitty again because of what's going on in the United States. Because it's just shitty. It just is. There's just getting around.
You should back off.
You're not the kind of person to handle it anymore. But then you detach yourself and then you think, well, you know, I should know about this because it's a pretty significant happening what this kid did and what the consequences could be.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, here's one of those things that people tell me that if there's nothing you can do about it, then why are you worried about it in any way whatsoever, right? I try to follow that with American politics because there's nothing you can do about what's going on down there. You can't vote. Your opinion counts as nothing. Mm-hmm. And any of these show trials, you just kind of at the back of your mind know that it's not going to go well. I mean, it's not going to turn out right. It's going to turn out fucked up, if that makes sense.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, they're braced in that city. What's it called? Kenosha? Is it? Is that the name? Anyway.
Isn't that what Phil's supposed to do is fact check? Phil, is that what supposed to do?
It's Kenosha, yep.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Kenosha. Yeah. They're preparing for the verdict, like on both sides.
You mean like they're calling in the National Guard and everything?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because things could go off. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Because if the kid's found guilty, all the whack jobs will come out. And if he's found innocent, you know, the other whack jobs will come out.
Right.
Because, again, the people in the middle tend to, you know, be level-headed and rational about it. But, again, it's so extreme there now on each side that, It's pretty sad. So even a court case, when it goes to, you know, to a court of law, to a jury, when you're supposed to accept, you know, the verdict, they're bracing for violence. So I don't know. And that could come down within the next couple of days. But
yeah, I guess is the jury started to deliberate yet?
No, not yet. Moving on. Angus Reid poll, just out, about 70% of Canadians agree that people should be fired for not being vaccinated. Dan, your thoughts?
I kind of agree. I don't think, you know, for not being vaccinated in this day and age. Yeah, there's no reason that if, I mean, as far as the path there. So I think that organizations that have people working other people to protect them, there should be some sort of notice on the path. Okay, like you need to be vaccinated by a certain date, and we'll give you a reasonable amount of time to do that. And but if you're not going to do that, then yeah, okay, you're out. What I mean, you know, part of the why wouldn't that be the case?
Well, to be honest, I thought it would be a bit higher.
Oh, more higher than 70%?
Well, yeah, because, you know what, 85% of the country is double vax right now. Isn't that... So I would think it would be somewhat consistent with that. 85% of the population is double vaxxed. I thought it would be higher than 70% that you should lose your job if you do not meet a deadline for vaccination. Does that not make sense, Dan Duran, to you? You know what I mean? Yeah. Why? Obviously, there's some leniency there. So, I was a bit surprised by that. And don't get me wrong. I think everybody should be double vaxxed. And again...
So you think that the population, there should be more people in agreement?
I think more than 70. I was just surprised that only 70% of people thought that... you should lose your job if you're double vaxxed, if you're not vaccinated, because 85% of the population is. You know, you see what I'm saying here?
Yes.
There's like 15% where people are going, maybe cut these people some slack. That I don't understand. But again, the bottom line is to nobody in this country or this province, no one's being forced to get a vaccination. That's another, you know, a bit of the bullshit. Nobody's being forced to get a vaccine. If you choose not to get a vaccine, you may lose your job and suffer the consequences, but nobody's forcing you to put anything in your body. What they're saying is, if you don't, you may lose your job and you have to live with the consequence.
Right.
So, again, I'm a little surprised that it's only 70%. Almost a little disappointed, because I wish people would go a little harder on that.
Well, I wish it was 100%, but I don't know. 70 seems pretty high to me. There's all those there's all the fence sitters that, you know, that you know, well, I'll wait for a while before I get vaccinated. I don't know, I'll wait and see kind of thing. Like Howard was talking about with a chiropractor yesterday, that attitude. So if you waited and then you got it, then you're still in the camp. Well, I understand other people not wanting to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But medical professionals should be certainly all vaccinated, or, you know, there should be a sign on their door if they're, you know, if you're coming in here, realize that this is the case. I don't think that you have the right to keep that information quiet.
Another thing I'm a little concerned about is the way we're sort of stuck on that 85%. Like, it doesn't seem to be growing at all. So it's almost like, this is it, ladies and gentlemen. And now, you know, they're talking, the chief medical officer for Ontario or something, we should revisit, you know, stadiums and arenas and pull back on capacity. And I'm thinking, boy, if we're at 85% and that's it, because it's not moving. As you say, it's never going to be 100%. So if we're at 85%, it's not moving. This is it. This is where we're at. So... it's not going to get any better than this as far as vaccinations goes. You can't shut things down. We've got to go forward with this and see where it takes us. I mean, we really do. And that's a big concern for me at this point, that they're talking about maybe pulling back on a few things, and we just can't do it. So it's either we get
to 100%. Well, you don't think that they should pull back on the stadium thing?
No.
Really?
No,
I don't even think they never should have allowed it to get that to that level anyway, in my opinion.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
But at some point, we got to put this thing to the test. That's the problem. We can't continue to live in fear. I totally agreed with it. Open it up and see what happens. And even the cases that we're getting now, like yesterday there were, in Ontario, there was like 550 some odd, about 55-60% were unvaccinated, which tells you almost like 45% or whatever were double vaxxed.
Yes.
Right?
And had breakthrough infections. Yeah.
Well, that seems alarming, but let's play the percentages again. If 85% of the population has been vaccinated, that means 15% of the population is responsible for well over half of the cases. Does that not tell you enough about the vaccination, what we need to do, and why those who have been double vaxxed should no longer be penalized with shutdowns or pulling back on capacity? We can't do that.
Well, I don't know. I think a stadium's a little bit different. I mean, if it's an outdoor event, mm-hmm. you know, partial capacity, like some of those stadiums, you're jam packed in those seats. Are you when you're going to the States? Are you going to any games in the States?
No.
So that's out for you because you
right. But only because there's no games to go to where I'm going. No, okay. I'm serious.
So if there was a fantastic, football, what kind of game would attract you? Football?
No, I don't know
hockey?
If I would, to be honest. But
because it's America.
Only because I might get aggravated while I was there looking at people breaking rules or whatever. You know, I might see somebody wearing a Confederate jacket or something because I'm going to South Carolina. Whatever. Yeah. But... you know what I mean? From that standpoint, I'm not sure I'd want to mix with Americans right now in that type of situation. I'm going to be on a few golf courses, so it may happen that way. But anyway, I don't think we can go backwards on this thing. We're going to have to live with it. This is it. This is where the new world is at, and we got to adjust to it.
Wait a minute. When you're down there in North Carolina, is that where you're going?
South
Carolina. So when you're there, like you're gonna like live a bubble existence, so you're not gonna interact with the Americans down there?
Probably. No, here's the thing. I've discussed this with the guys we're going with.
You had a meeting?
Yes. We're driving down there.
Right. Four guys in a car?
Three
guys in a car, okay.
We're driving down there. We'll halfway down we'll stay in a hotel one night.
Uh-huh.
And then we arrive, we got this 3-bedroom condo. And we're going to golf courses, and we're a threesome, which means it'll just be the three of us on the golf course. And like we do here, when we go into a restaurant, we'll wear a mask until we sit down. We've already discussed if the restaurants are really, really packed, we probably won't go in.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But they shouldn't be, because it's sort of the off-season down there. So.
What about the... So when you're on the golf course, is a threesome...
Yes.
Don't they often like force another person on you so that there's a foursome on the course?
Well, hopefully not. We will reject that idea. Although, you know, Darren and I, when we golf just the two of us, you don't like to be paired with two other guys if you don't know them. Because, listen, if they're good guys, fine. But if they're not, you know, it sort of wrecks the day, so to speak.
You're spending 4 hours with
right.
two guys you don't know. Got
so
it.
So we were at a golf course up near Peterborough. Near you, as a matter of fact, Quarry. It was just the two of us, and they tried to pair us with another couple of guys. But the two guys said that we couldn't because they were waiting for their friend.
Yeah.
Right? They said, oh, sorry, guys. Well, we're waiting for our friends are late. We can't do that. And we thought, oh, that's cool because we didn't want to be paired with you anyway.
Everything's
well, we
good.
We
yeah.
wanted to play on our own.
Yeah, and I get it.
But, you know, as the first couple of holes I said to Darren, I said, you know, they were bullshitting. They said that so they didn't have to play with us.
He really? Said, you like you so? You could tell? You had
oh,
some
I
sort of
tell,
bullshit
tell
detector?
From a mile. Yeah.
Okay.
So after the round, we're sitting on the patio having a beer, and we start talking to these guys. And I said to him at one point, I said, I want you to be honest with me right now. You were full of shit, right? You didn't have friends coming. You didn't. You guys just didn't want to play with us because you didn't know us. And the guys, he admitted. He said, yeah. So anyway, to answer your question, when we're down in Carolina,
yeah.
if they say that, I'll use the same trick.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe use the same trick.
Oh. Like Bob is just coming. He's coming. So we've got a fourth, but he's not here yet. So he'll join us on the course, that kind of thing, right?
Right. Is Liz West in the waiting room?
I'm looking here. I'm not seeing any waiting room requests. So I don't know if I'll text her and see if she's...
All right. And you must have Gig Sky at hand.
Gig Sky, yeah, it's standing right here.
Okay, because this is the Gig Sky guest of the day.
This is the moment? Oh, right, the Gig Sky guest of the day, right.
Right?
Yes. So I'll have
so
that
what we'll
by.
Do is leading into this, you can maybe I'll tell you about Bodog, okay?
Yeah.
And then you will do the Gig Sky read.
Okay.
And then I'll introduce Liz West.
All right. That sounds
lovely.
Is that
okay?
So the only hiccup on this thing is if Liz West doesn't connect.
Well, apparently she was super excited to be on the show because she's in love with you.
Well, I love her.
No, she is.
She's in love with
Mike Boone. When Mike Boone booked her, she was like over the top crazy because she so loves you so much.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys could explain that relationship.
Well, yeah. Well, we met like when I was doing that entertainment show called E! Now.
Mm-hmm.
That was... I don't know, in the 90s, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Okay, bodog.eu/sports. You know, if you want to bet any of the major league sports, you can. It's all there, and they have a poker room, all sorts of ways to wager and have fun with sports, you know. Responsibly lay down a few dollars. Like tonight, the Maple Leafs play the Nashville Predators, and the Maple Leafs are favored. But the, well, a sizable favorite because the Predators pay about $165 to win, which means, Dan, on a $100 bet, you would win $165.
Right.
So whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, a casino player, Bodog is your number one source of online gambling entertainment. From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994, bodog.eu/sports.
When it comes to keeping track of our health, many of us are using wearable devices or special apps on your phone to monitor the well-being of each one of us. But
no, this is Gig Sky, Dan.
This is Gig Sky?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
The Gig Sky guest of the day. So read the Gig Sky spot.
Okay.
You were going to do health gauge, which is
it?
Cool. You were going to do
okay.
Why don't health I gauge? Read it?
Yeah, health gauge is cool, Dan.
Right,
but when you let's do Gig Sky.
Let's
okay?
do Gig Sky because you know when you're traveling places like our good friend Howard, who's in Venice, he took Gig Sky with him because you know when you're traveling, there's lots of you know things you're using data all the time, right? And you know it's very expensive.
Yes.
If you haven't got the right program, and here's a good one to think about is Gig Sky. International travel has started to increase and only become more and more of our everyday life as we get vaccinated. So don't forget your Gig Sky data plans for your travel needs, whether you're off to the tropics, heading to Europe, just plan to make your way down south. You'll need mobile data to keep connected, and that's why it's good to download the Gig Sky app for Android or iOS and get affordable daily coverage in over 190 countries worldwide. It's easy and affordable and a way to keep connected internationally. And Gig Sky is the sponsor of the Gig Sky guest of the day. And that is our good friend, Liz West.
Yes, she's produced, reported, and anchored on five different networks.
Only five?
That's amazing. Yeah, that's what it says here, including CTV and City TV. She's captured the Toronto Sun Reader's Choice Award for Favorite Entertainment TV Reporter 2 years in a row. Frequently found on stage acting as MC or moderator for a variety of live and virtual events. And she coaches professionals and future stars who want to be well-spoken. She does it all. It's Liz West.
Wow. Thank you, Fred. When do you guys want to start with your first session, by the way, about speaking well? I want to get back to Gig Sky. How do I get some of that? I hate traveling and finding out that I've got some astronomical, you know, cell phone bill.
Yeah.
I don't understand that whole, you know, realm of what you have to sign up for to get, make sure it's all good. I constantly blow my wallet on it.
Well, I want you to go to gigsky.com today.
Okay.
And find out all about it. It's fantastic to carry data with you when you're traveling.
No. I heard you say carry daddy.
Oh, carry daddy.
I did hear you say that. I just want to know who's daddy.
Right. Liz is here to tune up the show. That's great.
So, yeah, it says here that you coach professionals and future stars who want to be well-spoken. Explain that a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, the idea of a lot of people these days, you know, visualize themselves as being an expert in their field that would maybe be on television or radio, like this fine show. But they get super nervous about how do I sound, you know, smart and entertaining when I'm doing it, and get all nervous and, you know, tongue-tied and things like that. So I just go through a program with people to help them get the skills they need so that they can reach that goal of being the expert in their field, whether it be on stage, you know, they want to be a public speaker, or they want to do it for media. And nowadays, actually, for doing it simply just a virtual meeting, it's like being on TV, right? You guys know that. It's like being on television. And most people don't want to be on television, as it turns out. They hate it. And there's nothing worse than watching someone who you know is so uncomfortable sitting there, because it makes everybody else uncomfortable. So I just work with people to, you know, get through that, get better at it, so that they actually enjoy it and excel at it. Because we're stuck. We have to do this.
So this is a great example of pivoting.
Yeah.
Because here you were for many years, a television star in the GTA.
In my own mind, yes.
Well, you were. I mean, you were one of those familiar faces. Like, you were the heyday of the whole City Pulse thing, right? With Gord and
I would say the latter heyday, heyday. Moses was leaving as I was entering. So, you know, it was sort of towards the end of the heyday.
Mm-hmm. And I met Liz when I was still working on the Humble and Fred show, and I went to E! Now. And that was with Carla Collins, and then Liz was one of the reporters on the show. Was that your first TV gig?
It was. My very first interview ever was with Def Leppard. I'll never forget it. It was like it was yesterday, you know, your very first something that you do for a big job, and I was so nervous. I literally didn't think I was going to be able to make it to the interview. It was at the Molson Amphitheater. And they were going to do a show, and I was interviewing them in the afternoon. And I had, I have friends. I've been in the music business for a long time, so I had some friends that I could call to get sort of the scoop on this band and some things I could ask them that would really impress them. You know, because you work really, really hard at something when you're new at it, right? You want to be great. You don't sit back and just sort of cruise anymore. So I'm trying to do everything I can. But I was so nervous. I was so sick in the morning. I thought I'm never going to get out of my house. The nerves were like a 10 out of 10. And then I finally dragged myself out and did the interview. And turns out these kind of hair bands always, they liked me. Like they didn't like me, but they liked me as an interviewer. So, so all the metal bands, it was pretty funny because I just didn't think that I would be their type. But they're always super nice, super generous with their answers. So it went really well. And that was it. That was the beginning, yeah. What was the question? Sorry.
Question. That was your first job, right? At E! Now. That's where we met. Question. Yeah.
I forget. Okay. But didn't you know what?
But didn't
I just said it was a great example of pivoting. You were in television, and then you've adapted these other ways of making money, which is something we've all had to do.
Yeah.
And contrast that to, what about today's television? What do you think about I watch City TV, the newscast, and it's just a sad, it's sad what's happened to that telecast. It just is. When you think of the heyday with Gord and Anne Murkowski and what it is now, it's really sort of fallen off the table.
I think it was ahead of its time, for sure. You know, understanding what people, what would resonate with people, the audience, and really having the less than typical reporters doing the reporting. It was as much about personality, I think, for them in their people as it was the stories. It's funny because I just read an article about Pam Seattle and her husband, David. It was in the Toronto Life magazine talking about they moved to the country. Haven't finished the article, but it's really, really good. But she's also one of those people that was one of the, she was on breakfast television. Do you remember Pam? When she was on breakfast television, she was, I think, the floor director or something, but they kept putting her in the show. So she became one of the sort of the characters on breakfast television. That's what that station was known for. It wasn't sort of drew back the curtain and you got to see inside.
And listen, I take nothing away from the talent that's there now, because I know it's all about budgeting. It's all about money. It really is. And they just don't pay the money that they did before, and it's reflected in the presentation. That's all there is to it. I mean, we've all had, again, all had to live with that. And that's where we're at. Like, would you have any desire to get back into it on any level?
I do still. I wish I'd done more news, more hard news. You know, I'm more interested in that. I was really interested in entertainment for a long time. Spent about 20 years in entertainment, and I love it. I also am interested in news and more investigative stories. So that's
right.
You know, I listen to great podcasts that talk, that dive deep into, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 episodes on a case, a murder case, or could be something else. It could be the Epstein story. So whatever it is, and I'm really enjoying those kinds of things right now as well, where you can take your time. Like, that's what I do love about digital media, as much as it turned traditional media on its head and, you know, really screwed a lot of us. I love digital media because there's no format, you know, you take as little or as long as you want, and you can dive deep into things.
Although entertainment was a lot like sports, I guess, for me, where, you know, they, what do they call it? The toy department or the candy department. Because, you know, in sports, I got to go on a lot of trips and a lot of, you know, neat little junkets. And I imagine it was like that with entertainment, too.
Oh, yeah.
Getting to go to neat places. And again, not a lot of stress either, because it's not like news or some world happening. It's just going there to talk about people having fun, basically.
Oh, are you kidding? When you describe that, Fred, my mind goes to Disney World. Because Disney World used to throw, and I don't think they do it anymore because of budget, but they used to throw big media days and fly media from all around the world to Disney World. And then they would invite celebrities to Disney World. And then they would close Disney World and line the streets with food and booze. And entertain, you might have gone on one of these yourselves, entertain the heck out of the media for a day or two in order to promote their latest attraction, whether they're opening a new ride or, you know, a new theme park within the grounds. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Oh, I know. There was a lot of those great sport ones over the years, too, when Labatt used to own the Blue Jays, and we'd go to Boston and New York, and they'd take us to restaurants and feed us booze all the time. It was something else. But anyway,
Mike, we're making Boone, everybody's like, why didn't I go into
that's
TV
right.
when I was, or radio when I was younger? I'm just a doctor now, you know? <That's right. laughs> What did I do?
So Mike Boone thought it was a good idea to book you because of your relationship with Dan Duran, and he was telling me that when he was in contact with you, you were super excited about being on this show because Dan was going to be part of it. Explain that. What are you seeing this guy?
Well, Dan is, we became friends, I guess, in the 20 years ago that we were working together on E! Now, and he's just one of those great guys who became good friends with me, my husband, our families, our friends. You know, that's how we met you. Fred, and now yes. we're really close, right?
Yes.
All that time you guys super spend close. Together, yeah.
Okay, I'm still working on being close with Fred.
Yeah. Well, remember, we...
It's a work in progress.
We kept yeah. talking about going on that vacation together, right? The families.
Mm. Which I actually did with Liz and Scott.
That's right. Scott's, oh, my God. We yeah. went on...
That was fun.
We went. Can I say we went to Cuba?
Yeah.
Okay.
We went to Cuba. The Hoguin area. Is that how you pronounce it?
It was the Hoguin area.
Yeah.
We stayed, and I was booking the travel, and it was between two resorts. And I said to the couples, you know, Dan and his wife at the time, and my husband, I said, which resort should we stay at? The 4-star or the 5-star? Mm-hmm. And there was maybe $250 price difference between the two. And I think the general consensus was, you know, we can just stay at the 4-star. I'm sure it's great. Well, we spent 5 out of 7 days trying to get into the 5-star hotel, which was right next door.
It was owned by the same company.
And all the
5-star people could come down to the 4-star area, but none of the 4-star people could go up to the 5-star area. So they had all the special restaurants and stuff, and you really couldn't get into that zone. So we were always like leaning over, coming up with scams from the entrance from the beach and that to try and, you know, get to those pools or whatever it was we needed.
Yeah, well, the food. Remember the food? Oh, was yeah. awful where we were. I mean, it was awful. I remember the first night we had snacks of like mandarin slices and cold french fries because that's what they had in the buffet. It was terrible. So, but it was a great vacation and, you know, things like that make great stories, right?
Yeah.
When traveling with Dan, any stories? Like, did he bump into anything? Did he fall off anything? Did he? I'm sorry, Dan, but you know, I have to ask.
Accident prone guy, right?
Yeah. Anything like that?
I don't think so. He's actually a good traveler. He's a bit worldly. He's done a lot of traveling.
No,
he likes to travel.
Mm-hmm. The one thing, Dan and I traveled once together, just he and I, back in the 90s to the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. And Howard warned me before I went away. He said, the funny thing is about Dan, you'll be with him, and if he sees something, say, like shiny, he'll just walk towards it, and you may not see him again for a few hours. And, you know, that actually happened a couple of times, but I was prepared for it. It's like Dan's head would go up, he'd just start walking in a direction, and I wouldn't see him for a couple of hours because something had caught his attention, and something caught his attention.
Yeah.
There's only so much beach laying around the beach that I can do. I get restless.
I get it.
I disagree completely. Anyway, I have to go, guys.
What?
I have to go.
Do you really? Why?
I do. I really do. I have to drive my kids to school.
Oh, so it's not nothing you do like with that. your public speaking, coaching, and virtual communications side of your world.
What?
Well, you're the TV radio personality, and you coach public speaking and virtual communications. That's what you texted me yesterday when I asked.
Yes, that's what Fred kindly said at the beginning of this segment. Yeah.
So, but it isn't. You have to drive your kids to school, which is
I have to go do that. That's none of this matters. My life doesn't matter if I'm not doing my mom's job.
Right. You're right. But as you know, Mike Boone put in the show notes here that you wanted to roast Dan Duran.
No, I said
maybe that's for another time. I don't.
Yeah,
know.
Exactly. I think yes, exactly. I hope there's many more opportunities to roast you and Dan and Phil, producer Phil, who's sitting there silently.
But quickly, Liz West, is there anything you want to promote, or is there anything we should know about you?
No, I don't want to promote anything. I just came on to say hi to you guys.
All right.
And have fun with you. And it's been fun.
But you realize this is one of the most popular podcasts in the country. It's a great place to promote things. You know that.
I do.
Business will skyrocket, Liz. Okay. Well,
everybody who's listening, just call me. Okay, how about that? That's my promotion.
All right, Rudra from Gig Sky texted me already saying that he wants to hook you two up so you can find out what that's all about.
Okay, that sounded dirty, but okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Fred.
Okay, see you later.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye. Well, there you go.
Yeah, she had said that she wanted to roast you, so I was looking forward to that. I didn't know that visit was going to be cut short.
I didn't know either. We should have focused more on that than other things. Maybe. Still learning.
Let me tell
show,
you.
Right?
Let me tell you about the Chamber Plan. It's Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. Chambers Plan, Canada's leading group benefit plan for 1 to 50 employees. Go to chamberplan.ca today. Go there now. Get a free quote. You'll find out how your small business can have a benefits package that works for all. It really does. It doesn't matter what level you buy in at. Listen, there is a plan for you. Medical, dental, the Teladoc system, travel insurance, all sorts of therapies, depending on the level that you buy in at. There's something for all small business. So go to chamberplan.ca today. Get a free quote, chamberplan.ca. Daniel.
When it comes to keeping track of our health, many of us are wearing devices, or there's apps on phones and that we monitor all of our various, especially Howard likes to keep track of every part of his body and what's going on with it to an obsessive level. Well, this is the kind of thing that you can do with HealthGauge, a monitoring system that hopes to make overburdened healthcare systems more efficient and cost effective. If you like to get in on the HealthGauge deal, you can go to healthgauge.com. There's a wealth of information there on how this HealthGauge system works, and Howard and Fred have been wearing these the devices for a long time now, and you know, Fred, you're both incredibly healthy because of it, right? Is that how it works?
Well, you can stay on top of your health,
right,
Dan?
Yeah,
that's how it works. I mean, I take my blood pressure quite often with it because I like to stay on top of that. The step feature is fantastic. You know, I like to hit at least 5,000 a day, and it helps me. It actually has a reward feature that if I hit 8,000 steps, it vibrates and shows a loving cup on the face of it.
So it gives you a little massage then?
Yeah.
A localized massage.
Absolutely.
Well, that's fantastic.
So you finish up there with HealthGauge. Do them well.
Do them well.
Mm-hmm. Are you done?
I'm done, yeah. Unless there's more. Oh, there's a code, which was misrepresented recently, in my understanding. So the code is HumbleFredHG for a 15% discount at checkout. That's HumbleFredHG. HumbleFredHG for 15% at the checkout. I know there's a song associated with that somewhere here. Is that right? I don't know where it is. I'm still learning all the things on the I'm using Howard's computer for all this, by the way. So I'm familiar with my commercial, my mm-hmm. computer and what's going on here. So I'm searching a little, trying to find stuff. So anyway.
That's fine. We clean that up a bit.
For tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. Now that I've had a day doing it. By the way, there's many things that... that I think we covered everything on the show.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man. His voice is nice and low.
Huh.
Dan Duran, the anchor man, comes. As for credentials, he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care. And his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now, live from the Humble and Fred studios on the Queensway in Toronto, not lakeside, not near Chemung Lake, here's anchorman Dan Duran.
Thank you, Fred. Today is National Button Day. To celebrate, think of all the things a button has done for you. From holding up your pants to that button down your collar, from button your lip to cute as a button, and from buttonhole to two on the button. Yes, today is Buttons Day. Honor the button. No more heated seats. Gala Manager, GM, is pulling heated seats out of its 22 models, and the whole reason is to do with the chip shortage. I guess it takes a chip to heat a seat these days, so it's got to go until normal arrives again. And not only that, the heated steering wheel is suffering the same fate. It's out because of the chips that it needs to run the steering wheel. And I don't think I've ever had an experience with a heated steering wheel. Have you?
No, it's not something that I would
pay for.
Yeah, I mean, if I bought a car that came with it, fine, but it's not an option I would pay for, because I'm not even a fan of the heated seat, to be honest.
You know, the first time I ever had one of those heated seats, I didn't know the heated seat was on. Mm-hmm. I started to wonder if there was something wrong with me, mm-hmm. like I had peed myself or something. Because all of a sudden it started to heat up and does, you know, if you're aware of what's happening, it's a different story entirely.
See, that's why I don't like it, because it heats up that whole area down there, and I find that uncomfortable because I start to sweat, you know,
in that area
around my junk. And then when you stand up, when you get out of the car and say it's cool outside, it's like a weird feeling. I just don't like it. Like when we get in the car, the first thing in the winter Delise does is she hits like full tilt heat seat. But I shut mine off. I don't like them at all.
So she says she's in there's three levels or something, and then
yeah, there's three levels, and she goes right to the top.
Right to the top, yeah.
But again, yeah. It's not something. Even a heated seat, it's not even something I would consider. I'm pretty basic with my cars. I don't, you know, it's, you know, cars nowadays come with so many options, and how many at the end of the day do you actually use? You know. Same with cruise control. I never use cruise control. That's pretty much standard now. Never, ever touch my cruise control.
You don't? Oh, I do. Nope. Yeah. Well, when you do on the long drives. Really? Because you're driving up to the lake all the time.
Never, never, ever do I use cruise control.
May save you on gas because, you know, you're not.
It might. Maybe.
It might. I don't
know.
But I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's
the only sort of new option I use now is when you can talk to your radio and say,
can you talk to your radio?
Yeah. Oh, I can talk. You can talk to your radio, can you?
No, mine's an old version of
play, you know, I'll go play Sirius Channel 28.
No, can't do that with mine.
AM radio 1050.
Really?
Yeah.
You got it down.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I talk to my phone all the time, but the car doesn't hear me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hear me, no.
So I have that feature.
It's interesting though with the heated seat. Because I know mm-hmm. a little bit about electricity, you know, from my mm-hmm. all my days, I've always been interested in audio stuff and that, you know, and basic electrical stuff is, you know, basically a heater is you turn the switch on, you turn it off. I don't really know why they couldn't do a workaround from an IC chip. I don't know why you need a chip to figure out how to heat a seat. That's okay, really well just
now,
a,
now you're talking over my head. I don't
probably to regulate the heat. Mm-hmm. You know how, like the chip needs to figure out how much heat it's giving you. And if you just press on or off, it would burn your ass, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true, Phil. That
I
is
guess
true.
Heat regulation.
That's do you have it. Another story, Dan Durant?
No, that's it for the day. That's
okay, let's turn it over to Phil now. Phil, I've been wanting to ask you this question.
Okay.
I think it was announced yesterday that Sesame Street has introduced an Asian American puppet named Zhi Lang or something.
G. Lang.
Yeah.
Oh.
Have you seen?
You haven't heard about this?
Well, that's rather nice, but I thought, you know, we had a Canadian version of Sesame Street once, didn't we? And so that was pretty diverse for what it was.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's nice for them to reflect it now, but I didn't remember Big Bird being Caucasian.
Oh, Phil, now you're just being silly.
I'm just saying, you know, it's a bird, and then you have a guy who lives in a garbage can, and then like somehow someone denotes ethnicity from that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually thought you'd have more to say about that. I thought this was a major breakthrough because it made all the news shows yesterday.
Well, yeah, Asian casting is a thing. Like, that's an issue, mm-hmm. right? Like, when was the last thing you watched before Squid Game that happens to be Asian, right? Kim's Convenience, maybe. But, you know, it's like we have a listener who's a fan of Kim's Convenience, and he actually chastises me because mm-hmm. I don't watch a show like that. But he's like, well, you know, it represents our community. And it's like, I guess.
Do you think it's important?
If they believe it's important, then it's important, right? If they mm-hmm. think that they feel like this would be a good idea on the show's part, it's probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen children's shows being Asian before. Like TVO 20 years ago used to have a show called Sagwa, and it mm-hmm. was an animated cat that spoke Chinese sometimes. So it's not new, but it's nice to see it, though.
Well, so what you're saying, you think it's important for diversification to be displayed?
If it fits.
If it fits.
But if it's like, well, we now know Grouch in the trash can happens to be a certain ethnicity, then I don't understand why.
But it's not something that you're obsessed with.
Nah, not really.
Interesting. How are things going with Pearl? Is she still somewhat, what was she a few weeks ago? She was a little stir crazy.
Yeah, she's let's just say our lifestyle in Canada is a bit more homey than she likes it to be. Because when you live in a country like Cambodia, when it's 38 degrees all year long, you don't need a weather forecast. That doesn't exist there because the weather doesn't change. She used to go out a lot. So every day she'd be at the mall. She'd be at restaurants. She would be at friends' houses. And the problem with us in Canada is that we kind of don't do that every day. Like, as much as we're social, as much as we go to restaurants or we go to stadiums or games, the thing is, we just don't go out as often as people like her. And so in order to placate some of that itchiness, I'm taking Pearly and Liz to Niagara Falls today. Liz, my sister, because the Niagara Falls Festival of Lights happens to start like last weekend. And before the snow really hits, I thought, we'll just have a nice walk at night, see all the LED lights and things like that along the falls.
When did she get here? When did Pearl arrive to
May 30th. So I came home with her from Cambodia May 30th, and we had her quarantined then.
Was there still snow on the ground then?
Oh, no. Well, she's seen snow here before, though. Like, last year she came
May
to visit.
May 30th, still snow on the ground? Did you say May 30th? You said May 30th?
I can't remember.
But last year, you remember, last year she did come. She did come because we had to finalize her paperwork because Canada said, you know, Canada, when they give permission to immigrants to come here, they give them a 6-month deadline. So if you're not at the airport to get anything signed, you're not an immigrant yet. So she came here last year to finalize the paperwork first. This was pre-COVID-19. Right. So she's seen snow. It was February. But she's now seen snow for the first time in her life yesterday. She saw some flurries.
And living here. What did she do?
She's just like, why isn't it sticking on the ground? She was ranting about it. She's like, well, I thought when snow fell, it would just accumulate. And so I had to explain to her that, you know, the ground is warm. It'll get cold eventually. And then the snow will stick to the ground. But we just happened to have like 2 bits of flurries yesterday, along with the rain. And so she was a little happy about that. She was snapping photos.
If she's getting bored and stir crazy, the winter's not going to help with that. So you better take up snowboarding or something, buddy.
She wants to go tubing. I told her, okay.
Oh, does she?
Start with tubing and then work up to snowboarding?
She wanted to go skiing. And I said to her, you don't want to go into that lifestyle yet. you got to learn to get used to the snow before you get used to being on skis in the snow. So I said, let's go tubing first.
Do you ski?
And then we'll graduate to skating, maybe.
Do you ski?
Not very well.
But you have skied, though.
Yes.
Well, okay.
In elementary school. Like, the last, I think it was like, I was 12 or 13. I was up at Mount St. Louis Moonstone. But that was the one time I skied.
Wow. You guys are kind of at the same level, then. And you can take that journey together.
Yeah. And I wish, Phil, I wish you all the best with Pearl through this this winter. Because I know it's got to be, it's got to be a bit of culture shock for the young woman.
And, well, she'll get used to it. The thing is...
Well, she better, eh?
well, she'll get used to staying home. But you know what? I have to get used to her wanting to go out more.
Have you ever thought if she ever starts pushing you, Phil, let's move back to Cambodia? I've lived in your country for a while. Now you come live in mine.
Oh, she's not interested in that. She just knows living here provides more privileges and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like if she becomes a Canadian citizen, she knows that, you know, basically you unlock 5/6 of the world. Because right now, with a Cambodian passport, you have to apply for a visa for every country you can think of. Anything that matters, like Italy, England, France, Australia, all the places she wants to go to. So she knows that, you know, it's sort of like our social health care system here. When you live in Canada, there's a price to pay, but you get something in return.
Right on. All right. Again, I thought you'd have more to say about the Asian Muppet, but...
Well, that's fine. You know, there's been Asians here. There's been Asians here for like 140 years.
No, so I know.
Maybe there should be someone on Sesame Street in 2021.
Dan Duran, do you have anything to say about the Asian Muppet?
I don't. I don't have the Asian Muppet doesn't look that Asian to me. That's the only thing I mean.
What do you mean by that, Dan? What does he mean by that, Phil? How does one look Asian? Let's put him on the spot.
Mm-hmm. Is it the eyes? Is it the face? Is it the paws?
I guess. I don't know. Maybe I don't want to say anything more. Now, I've opened myself up, I guess, really. But, as an ethnicity, doesn't read Asian to me immediately. Now that I've been told, I guess I get it. But I don't know.
Oh, yes, you must watch what you say nowadays, Dan.
Yes, see? I don't want to...
See the way I jump right into that hole there?
I see it. Yeah. You help me out with that. Thank you.
That's what happens to people nowadays. Yeah. You have to watch everything you say.
I don't know. Phil, have you seen... Have you done a Google search so far?
I've seen her. Yeah, she looks like Rosie O'Donnell. Basically, if you made Rosie O'Donnell into a Muppet, that's what she looks like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So does that puppet look Asian to you?
But you can understand where they're coming from, though, right? Because they've always been into the touching social issues like that. Remember, there was an episode of Sesame Street where some character's parents went to jail and they somehow had to speak about it.
Oh, yeah.
They like tackling issues like that.
They've been on the outer, pushing out those boundaries a lot over the
years. And the producers of Sesame Street have explained that part of this came from the anti-Asian sentiment through COVID. Especially in the United States, obviously. A lot of people still suffering the effects of that, believe it or not. But that's sort of where this seed was born, so to speak. So, all with the best of intentions.
Hey, I was looking at the news this morning, which surprised me a lot, is how much rain has fallen in British Columbia. I spent some time this summer with my brother in a place called Mabel Lake, which is, he's building a cottage there, is helping out with that, which is between Kelowna and Kamloops, and had made the drive a couple of times between Calgary and Kelowna. And parts of that highway that I drove on are now closed because, and then even further west, all over to Vancouver, like in Victoria, I think they had a month's worth of rain, and it's all rainy out that way in the west, a month's worth of rain in 48 hours. And that's what's causing all kinds of highways to wash out. There were over 200 people that were stranded on a highway that they had to be helicoptered out. The Coca-Cola, the Coke, as people like to call it. There's a bridge or two that has been washed out of that highway. Mm-hmm. The highway I've traveled between on the Trans-Canada, between around Golden, has been closed. And there are a lot of closures, highway closures, and they evacuated a town of 7,000 people.
Right. Well, that's out there and that is here. We don't have to worry about that. And it's funny, eh? You can't shake the weatherman in you.
Eh? Oh, no, I can't. So
what are you fantasizing that you're a weatherman out there and you're standing in front of a board pointing to all the different regions and situations out there?
I'm of two minds to that. I would love to watch what's going on. But there's another side of me that said, well, that's so, dumb and dangerous to want to be out there with a camera documenting all that because, you're putting yourself in danger, and that's not necessarily the best way to go.
Yeah, I've seen some of the mudslides, and that it's crazy what's going on out there. It really is. So,
after all the summers of
you know what, I think we're done for today. Thank you, Liz West, for being part of the show today. Abbreviated as it was, we expected a little more out of her as well. But that's fine. Tomorrow on the show, Bruce Stobig, and used to be a sportscaster in Toronto, now lives out west and leans somewhat to the right and has pretty much an opinion on everything. That should be interesting.
Oh.
Interesting.
Because you have no opinions, so then.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I sort of worked in and around him during the sports beat back in the 80s. Also part of the show tomorrow. Things that Dan Duran and I disagree on. Because, you know, off the top of the show, I talked about the trailer and the time we spend together. Well, a lot of that time is spent debating issues.
And in front of the fire, yeah.
I want to talk about it, though, about a few of those tomorrow.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
So again, see you tomorrow.
Okay.
This episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Health Gauge, Bodog, and our newest sponsor, Dewar, D-U-E-R, the world's most comfortable pants. We stream to the planet from the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show. More Fred and Dan tomorrow and online at humbleandfred.com.